Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. We've been talking finances and retirement this month, possibly tricky subjects given the state and the unpredictability of the economy currently. We started with an American financial / retirement planner who works with federal government employees. Next, my guest was a Canadian financial / retirement planner. Pretty specific countries, I understand, but these sorts of conversations will trigger thoughts and questions and give you topics for discussion no matter what country you live in. And if you want to learn about similar topics specific to your country, let me know. I'll find someone to guest in this space for you. Today, I thought I was wrapping the retirement discussion with a financial therapist. I learned so much talking with John today. You'll appreciate the importance of his profession as you hear him speak. Now, I just said I thought I was wrapping, but I have one more week for you. If you're considering giving up your current 9-to-5, next week I have a succession planner for you. I'm really appreciating all this information. I hope you are too. Listen now as John Hankins explains what a financial therapist is, why it's so important, and gives us his thoughts, both close up and from a distance, about being prepared for however you are defining retirement. Well, it's been an interesting month so far, hasn't it? We started with an American retirement planner. He caught my attention because of everything going on south of the border. Immediately after I'd booked him, a Canadian retirement planner contacted me, and I wanted to have a show for all my fellow Canadians. And today we have a unique angle, a financial therapist. I'll admit, when John contacted me, it was kind of like, huh? Financial therapist? But he talked about cultural messages and the emotions that money talk can trigger. And as well, we all approach that age of leaving the 9-to-5, all those other questions. Oh my God, do I have enough saved? What do you mean my pensions will only pay me $1,800 a month? Or, and this is not uncommon at this age, my spouse took care of everything and now they're gone. I don't know what's going on. Does any of that sound familiar? Did you know there's a Financial Therapy Association? So this is a real thing. As an aside, John reinvented himself, restarted a career from 40 years ago at age 71. So he might have more insights for us than just finances. John Hankins, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Agnes, thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here today.
Let's start at the very beginning. What is financial therapy?
Okay. Well, let me read you from the Financial Therapy Association, their definition, and we can go from there. Okay?
Okay.
So they say financial therapy is a process informed by both therapeutic and financial competencies that helps people think, feel, communicate, and behave differently with money to improve overall well-being through evidence-based practices and interventions. So that's the windy definition. What I like to say about financial therapy is that first and foremost, it recognizes that you have a relationship with money and focuses on building that relationship in a positive direction.
Okay, which is a really good thought, because we are at that age. We were brought up that polite company didn't discuss money. That extended into our marriages oftentimes, and possibly we pass that down to our children. How do you see that affecting older couples now that are in their 60s?
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, I love what you just said, because not only do we pass it down to our children, but I think for older couples in their 60s, we can still be listening to our grandparents who were raising their parents during the Depression and passing that down. It's not unusual to hear people talk about fear of, you know, the market's just going to crash and I really can't depend on this, or I've got to save everything and I really can't spend. And when you dig into that, and that's a big part of financial therapy, when you start to dig into that, it's like, oh yeah, this was my parents talked like this. And then you hear that they're talking like they were in in the Depression when, in fact, they were kids in the Depression, and what they were doing was listening to their parents. And so this whole family history around money gets passed from generation to generation to generation. I think that it's really, you have to recognize that it takes work to figure out what that story is and to build a different story.
You just really scared me about what I've said to my children, because I had a much older dad who did live through the Depression. So it's like, oh my goodness. Although I don't remember him necessarily talking about money except to admonish anybody who opened the subject. So
yeah. That's another great point about financial therapy, because one of the other things other ways that I describe financial therapy, and we should talk about who are financial therapists, because that's an important piece of the picture. But the other part of this is that financial therapy just explicitly recognizes that it's more than okay to talk about money. It's important to talk about money, that money has this enormous impact on our wellness. And I will, with all due respect to my mental health colleagues and the mental health profession, I think we have done a real disservice to society in our real unwillingness to face money as part of the whole mental health picture. And we've brought in food, we've talked about sex, we talk about work. You know, I'll give you an example. If you go to Psychology Today website has a listing. I think there's like 15,000 therapists that are listed on the Psychology Today website. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but you can go in there. I need a therapist, and I want to go look, and they give you these characteristics, and they have a set of, let's just call them problems or disorders or whatever. This is the thing that I need help with. And I've actually done some research on this. They have over 70 different items, not one of which is related to money.
Wow. And yet isn't I won't say it's the leading cause, but a big cause of divorce is money.
It's a divorce, anxiety. It's a huge piece of when you talk about people. What do you worry most about? Money is frequently at the top of the list. So the mental health profession has basically just ignored that. And so here's the interesting thing, to bring it back to your other guests. So the Financial Therapy Association has been around since about 2009. I think it was interesting to hear your intro of, wow, what is financial therapy? What is this? And people are surprised to hear that it's been around, you know, for over 15 years, but growing slowly. The Financial Therapy Association is the home for financial therapy. And the organization is made up of both financial planners and mental health professionals. So there's this continuum of expertise, and really a continuum of goals for the individual. So on the financial planning side, typically a financial planner gets interested in financial therapy because they recognize that people are coming into their office and they have all of this emotional baggage that they don't really know how to deal with. They don't want to become therapists per se, but they want to be more effective at responding to their clients and then possibly referring them if it's really, some really deep-seated issues. On the mental health side, it is people in the mental health profession that have come to recognize that, hey, money is an important thing here. It's really part of the whole picture, and I don't know what I'm doing. You know, when someone comes in and they're talking about their money issues, I don't know how to respond. And they want to build a specialization that is, I would just say, hangs the sign out. It's, you know, talk to me about your money problems. And it's not just that you know, it's not about, I don't have enough money. It's much broader than that. So you've got this whole continuum that is part of this that makes it a really interesting conversation and a really interesting organization, because I interact with a lot of financial planners. I'm actually a member of the Financial Planning Association. I'm an affiliate member there because I think it's really important to understand all of these other pieces. So it does bring into it what I would say, and is often described as financial coaching, which I see as the more practical aspect of this. So for me, in my approach, there is the emotional piece, but then there's also the practical piece. I have a client right now who's she'll be 70 in a couple of months, and she is eligible with this is a U.S. thing. There's this thing called the Fairness Act that was passed last year that previously, if you were in certain government positions, we had a government pension, you could, there's certain government pensions, teachers, you know, public servants, where they could opt out of our Social Security system and just pay into that pension, even though they might have access to Social Security from their spouse, that would be excluded because they opted out. Well, that was just changed last year. So that in my client's case, they are entitled to 50% of their spouse's Social Security. And so that's a just brand new change. So understanding that and how to go about the process of applying for that is another important piece of the whole picture. So I see it as going beyond just let's talk about your money story and you're trying to resolve these issues. Let's look at some of the practical pieces of this as well. And I think that for boomers, it's, you know, then you're into the whole, how do I manage my retirement accounts? You know, what are all the tax rules? On and on and on. And so I think it's important to, be part of that solution to help them figuring that out.
As you were explaining that, having talked to quite a number of financial planners, financial advisors in the last few years that I've been doing this podcast, talking to mental health people, it's like I can see that a lot of mental health people, they've probably got their own money stories, you know, so they don't know how to talk about money specifically, other than, you know, how it's messing you up. But financial planners also, they almost do the financial mom or the financial dad. Don't worry about it. I'll help you get, you know, like plan. Whereas instead of looking at what brought you to this place where, you know, it's absolutely taboo subject or you can't save for love nor money, like that sort of thing. So, yeah, to have the financial therapist, you're almost like the umbrella for both departments.
Yeah, in many cases, I view myself as kind of the gateway drug to financial planning. That I hear lots of stories, and I'm a personally been through this myself, that I hired a financial planner. It was the fee-only type of financial planner. I gave him my information. I paid him, you know, it's like $1,000. This was a couple decades ago. I paid him like $1,000. You know, we went through all my stuff, and he came back to me 3 weeks later and said, here's your financial plan. This is what you ought to be doing with all your different, you know, 401ks, IRAs, whatever, go do this. And I said, thank you very much. And I looked at it. I was kind of overwhelmed with anxiety. I put it in a desk drawer and never to look at it again. And I hear that story over and over. And it is a well-known problem in, you know, the financial planning industry, of just getting clients to take action. And it even comes before that, which is, okay, you've come to me I'm the financial planner. You've come to me for help with your financial plan. Here's the information that I want, you know, just right off the bat. Okay, so what do your monthly expenses look like? You know, oops, frozen, too much anxiety. Never to show up again. Right. So I view part of my role is to really look at, all right, Why can't you move forward with this? Let's take it a step at a time. You know, let's continue to talk it through. Tell me how you feel. You know, tell me how you feel when you think you should be looking at that bank statement and you continue to put it off and put it off and put it off. What's going on there? You know, let's look at that specific action. Excuse me. So I think there are building blocks that we break this down into smaller pieces and then kind of build it back up. And in some cases, it is, kind of overkill for a financial planner. Frankly, they're just, you know, the client doesn't have enough money or enough complexity to really merit the cost. And so it's pretty straightforward. But in other cases, now you're at the point where talking to a financial planner, I have a client where this just finally happened after probably 7 months but where he had a conversation with a financial planner, and I was like, this is the greatest, you know, this is a real milestone for you. And the thing that he said that I thought was interesting, he said, yeah, it's, you know, I'm going to have this conversation. He said, but I'm really glad I can bring it back to you. So I've got, it's not just I'm listening to one person. I've got a third party that can look over my shoulder and just sort of give me some kind of general advice. That's part of the role as well.
I'm just really glad you weren't in my life in 2008 when those statements came in as the market was crashing, and I just would literally look at the envelope and fire it into a drawer and say, it's only my employer's money that I'm losing. Oh, dear. You've talked about money story a couple of times. Is there a common money story among boomers, or does everybody just come with their own little baggage?
That's a good question. Let me think about that a little bit. I think the 2008 piece is definitely plays a role for a lot of people, and it's playing a big role right now in kind of what's happening in the U.S. and by extension, you know, in Canada. Unfortunately,
yeah, absolutely.
My apologies. I've had a number of people. It's like, okay, should I get out of the market? Are we headed for another 2008? What's going to happen? So I think that experience, you know, lives on for sure. Just like the Depression lived on with our parents or grandparents, that 2008 for a lot of people was a really difficult time, and so they know how bad things can get in a sense. I have been very fortunate in my career that I was not much impacted by 2008. I recognize that I've been lucky. It wasn't that I'm some kind of genius or anything. I've been pretty lucky in being at the right place at the right time. I went through the, if you look back at the 1987 crash, which was very short-lived, but made a big, I think that the market in one day, was it 15, 20%? It was a big drop, but it came back pretty quickly. I remember that I had a coworker who was nearing retirement, and I was in my 30s at the time. He was nearing retirement, and he was just completely freaked out, over the edge, kind of. So we have this dependence on, I would say, let's just call it the stock market. We have this dependence on, we're not getting pensions. We've got these investment accounts. We have a couple different things that are going on as boomers. And that is, on the one hand, we can take any scenario that comes to mind. The market's going up tomorrow. The market's going down tomorrow. It's the end of the world. It's a great time to invest. pick your scenario, and you will find someone out there who has written an article that confirms that, you know, that scenario. So there's both this whole idea of confirmation bias. I'm going to find stuff that just reinforces what I think is going to happen. But I think there's another piece of that, which is just utter confusion, you know, like what in the heck is going on? You know, I look over here and it says it's great. And over here it says it's horrible. Who can I trust?
I think as boomers, we're at that age, though, where you know, whether you talk 1987, 2001, 2007, 2008, there was always time to recoup some of those losses. Whereas what's happening now, if this unfolds to be really awful, is I can see where a lot of people have that panic moving in of, oh my God, like, what do I do now? I'm 70, whatever. And yeah, it can be really frightening. Do you actually have to talk people off a ledge from time to time, so to speak?
I've had a few people in the past few weeks that have been, you know, should I get out of the market? Should I sell everything? So I'm not a financial planner. But my own plan and my own philosophy is as follows. From a kind of an existential point of view, we are captive customers of the stock market. Okay? That we have all, we like it or not, we've all signed on to tying ourselves to the market. The good news is that, and this has been really good news over the last 20 years, that the market has continually been on an upward trend. Okay? The issue is volatility in the market, which has a huge emotional impact on us. And we know that we feel and remember the losses much more than we feel and remember the gains. Okay, it's about a 2-to-1 ratio. In terms of emotional intensity, losing $100 is similar to winning $200. Okay, so. So we've those dips we really feel, but that investing for the long term has been a successful strategy for a long time, decades, and we're locked into that. If things are going to completely disintegrate, then we will have much larger problems than just the stock market.
Yeah, okay. I think because of the times we live into with memes and all that sort of stuff. I saw one this morning that I went, can't look at that, because it actually had like a little video piece in it where the numbers went from really nice green numbers, and within about a second and a half, they plummeted down into red numbers on like a little winder thing. And I went, and it was obviously like a stock market graph kind of thing. And I thought, like, that's crazy making. That just, you know, if you go down that rabbit hole, you are going to jump off the ledge. So you just have to, make sure you pass those ones by.
But the other piece of it, and this is the practical piece, this is my own approach to this, okay, is that I look at that market dips, that you need to protect yourself from market dips for 2 to 3 years, the potential for. You know, if you look at 2008, it was 4 years before the market got back to where it was. Okay, at 2000, it was 2012 before it started moving. It was moving up pretty quickly, but to get back to the same level. So you know, I've got $500,000 now. Now it's 300,000. To get back to that $500,000 was a 4 year process. So I think that was. You know, an extreme. Hopefully that doesn't happen again. I looked at 2 to 3 years. And so what I want to do is have money that is, either in high yield savings accounts or CD ladders or whatever, that I can pull that money versus having to take money out of the market. Because the real killer to your retirement investments is when you have to take money out when you're in a down market. So I just, that's kind of how I structure things for myself. And the thing that I really think is important for me from that is that that lets me sleep at night. Okay. I have enough understanding of like, okay, if things get really bad, this is back to, my belief is that the market will come. If we have a big dip, the market will come back up. Okay. We're tied to that. We're prisoners of that belief. So I want to structure things around that. The other thing that I did last year was I took out a home equity loan, which cost me $100. I'm not taking any money out of it, but I have, again, if I need money and we've had a really horrendous market crash, I've got access to cash versus having to sell out of the market. So that's what that, and I've done a lot of my own modeling of this. That's really the killer, is when you have to sell when you're in the down market. So that's just the practical application of that. So my counsel to people when they've said, should we sell? I said, no, you shouldn't try and time the market, but you should have a strategy that if the market is, you're really in a down market, you know, what is your strategy to avoid selling? Do you have other funds? You know, do you have a fixed income portfolio that will protect you? And I think that the thing that is complicating about that is that the whole idea is that fixed income bonds are not supposed to be correlated with stocks in terms of movement, but the bond market's not been all that great for the past several years because of all the low interest rates. So it's fixed income hasn't been that great. So that's been a little bit challenging, but that's my kind of high level approach to the whole thing.
If my financial advisor is listening right now, she's going like, oh my God, Agnes has blanked over. she is so good. She is so patient, but I must admit you start talking like at a certain level and it's just like, okay, like I'm lost. I want to go over to like the couples thing for a minute.
Sure.
If a couple has been married for say 40 years, and that's a lot of water under the bridge, if they're not, if they've got different money stories, which they haven't really had time or interest, like they, I guess they just haven't thought about discussing it, mm-hmm. you know, because things will always work out when you're 30. Mm-hmm. How does that, first of all, question is, how does that mess up retirement planning when they come with different stories and now they're looking at retirement, and I use air quotes?
Well, I think it can create a pretty big challenge. I honestly, I'm trying to think, in all the couples that I've dealt with, there has always been an imbalance. There's been one who's been the primary, maybe not the primary. There hasn't necessarily been an imbalance in level of effort or work, but there's been an imbalance in who's making the most money and where does most of that sit and where do those decisions. And it is unfortunately, it's usually the guy, not always, but usually the guy. So I think that there is, because of that, generally this kind of bifurcation in terms of the level of knowledge about what's going on. And so I think the first step with that is communication, just understanding. And this, I think, separates the financial planner from the financial therapist, where the financial therapist is going to look much more at the communication styles. How does this couple work together? What are the hot buttons between them? Where might they be struggling? What's the feel? When you deal with a couple, you pretty quickly get a sense of how do these people relate, and so then I think it becomes kind of an unfolding process at that point in terms of, okay, what do we need to do here to get both, you know, of these people, if not invested, at least comfortable. And I'm not saying that that's easy to do by any means, but at least working towards getting comfortable with talking about money, looking at understanding what they have. I think it's, you know, I've worked with couples where it is just really a struggle in terms of the money story of, you know, one member is like, yeah, we got plenty of money and we should be doing these things. And, you know, the other person, oh, you know, this is just freaking me out. You know, yeah, we're going to take this trip, but I'm not going to enjoy it because I don't think we should be spending this money. And so that makes me sad when I see that, quite honestly. That's really one of the reasons why I did reinvent myself, because I've been there myself. You know, I've lived through that. I am living through that, and I think that it both gives me some credibility and informs my point of view on these things. That I understand how challenging it can be to break through those communication barriers. You know, I'm still working on that. I've been married for 41 years, still working on it.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question, is how do they begin to communicate effectively now? Yeah. You know, I'm sure that's a gentle approach kind of thing. Or yeah. Maybe I should ask if it's a gentle approach kind
well,
of
yeah,
thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things that with couples is just the acknowledgement that they have something they want to work on and they're looking for some help. I'll just say that the whole therapy business to me is a lot of it is just listening. It's just being there to listen. You know, that it is as important to be there and listen and give people the trust and the space to really talk and examine what they're feeling as it is to have some kind of, you know, oh, I'm doing EMDR, or, you know, I'm a behavioral therapist or whatever. That just being there and caring about who you're working with is 60% maybe more of being effective.
As a financial therapist, I mean, it's one thing when you've got the one person who says, oh, yeah, let's take this fabulous trip, and the other person's going like, oh, we can't afford it. But at age 60, 65 or beyond, when perhaps one person is retired and thinking, oh, let's travel, and the other person says, oh, I want to keep on working, you know, like I love my job and I have no intention. Does that ever come into like your bailiwick?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm thinking of a couple right now.
Okay.
And yeah, I think that becomes the art of compromise. I actually think that can be a much easier problem to solve with one caveat. Okay, and the caveat is: are they being honest? If it is, yeah, you know, I'm retired, I want to do the travel, yeah, I still want to work, but, you know, I want to do things as well, as long as they're being honest and there isn't something under, like, really, I don't want to go anywhere with this person. This is a good excuse. I'm way too busy. Love to go to Italy, but really way too busy. I think that's important to you know, uncover that and make sure that there aren't other things driving that behavior. But because I think it's a perfectly legitimate set of circumstances that, I mean, my wife and I went through exactly that in terms of she retired and I was still working for full time, another 6 years. Another 8 years after she retired. But her thing was she wanted to take care of our grandkids. And so that really required compromise, because I wanted to travel, actually. I had a lot of vacation time and a flexible schedule. And that's what was important for her, was taking care of our grandkids. And we worked that out pretty. I mean, it was actually a really wonderful thing, the way that it worked out.
And I can see, too, where, like, this whole honesty thing, if, you know, it's a fact of life that gray divorce is, it's on the increase. It's gone crazy in the last probably 10 years. And so to find out at this age that it's not a matter that I don't want to travel, I just don't want to travel with you, then thank goodness you're a therapist, because then you're in a whole different arena.
Yeah.
Do you have to let go of them at that point in time and pass them on to a different type of therapist, or is that under your bailiwick too?
No, that would, I've never had anything where it got that serious. No, that would go into two directions, because there are financial planners that specialize in divorce as well, because for gray divorce, the financial piece is really complicated and critical. Really challenging. So yeah, there is a, you know, can this marriage be saved kind of thing that would probably, that's not me. And okay, you guys have made up your mind. Then here's the you know, again, back to the practical implications of that. Okay, you need to be talking with somebody who's really gonna be able to advise you on the finances, and, you know, all the legal intricacies of who has, is it a community property state? Who's got the pension? Who's entitled to what? Who owns the home? Are there multiple homes? You know, all those sort of things can get really complicated.
Okay, now that we've reached complicated, complex, and over emotional, how about single people? They're looking at a retirement where their expenses may not be quite as high as a married couple, but there's, as a single person, they're high enough, but they've only got that one income. Do you deal with singles as well? Or how do you deal with singles?
There's a couple that, multiple individuals that come to mind. And I was working with one woman who was really in the high anxiety state. She had not looked at her retirement accounts for a couple of years, just was freaked out. And at the same time, had a number of friends, also other single women, who had retired and successfully. And she was feeling both anxiety and the kind of not good enough syndrome of, you know, oh, my friends, they were successful at this. I'm really going to, you know, I'm headed for a disaster. What am I going to do? And my role with her was simply just getting her to look at her retirement accounts. And when she did, she was pleasantly surprised. So that was an interesting case there. I can't think of anybody I've worked with who was divorced earlier on and has some of those kinds of complications. She was always single, and so she had kind of always been, and she was actually a budget analyst, had always been kind of planning for herself. So it was, things were calibrated to her being single when she was retired. I have another client who is actually a high net worth individual who's really trying now. It's a guy who's just turning 50, and he is thinking more about his legacy of what he wants to happen with his money when he's gone. The interesting thing is that I think when you throw the whole life expectancy into things, really, I don't think that our boomer generation has completely adjusted to the reality of the increased life expectancy. And by that, I mean that my financial planner tells me that they do these calculations that my life expectancy is 102. My father was 90.
I always say I come from a long line of long livers.
Yeah. My father was 95 when he died, and my mother was 92. For my wife, her mother was 101. Her father died much. Her father died in his 70s, but she has a slightly lower life expectancy than me. So when the reason I bring that up was when I get back to this guy who's talking about his legacy, it's kind of like you may be around for, you know, you're only 50. You might be around for another, another 40 or 50 years. And so let's not jump to the legacy. Let's stay focused on you and what you want this to look like. So I think that's really another interesting piece of the whole puzzle. Our generation, just looking at what do we want our retirement to be, and just that it could be. I mean, here was an insight that I had. My father worked for the same company for 30 plus years. He was not particularly successful, didn't like his job. It wasn't what he had set out as a career. He just did it. It gave him a decent retirement. The last 3 years of his life, he had Alzheimer's. But up until that point, into his early 90s, he was doing pretty good. And he retired. He had a package where he was a few months shy of his 60th birthday when he retired. He was actually retired for longer than he worked.
Wow.
And I think that is, not for us, it's not going to be not that unusual. That we retire in our 60s, then we live well into our 90s. I mean, and that, for, women have a longer life expectancy. So right there is another piece of that puzzle. And so I think when you start to look at that, it makes the whole planning. I think, we tend to come into this with a kind of 10 or 15 year time horizon when we should have a 20 or 30 year time horizon. That there's some really important implications there on the financial planning side, but I just think on the emotional side, as retirees, we've got plenty of time to do plenty of things, and I'm doing this now. I want to do this for the next 10 years, but and maybe longer. I love looking at. I forget who there was a recent actor anyway who was doing something. He was 91 years old, and here, and I look at people that are public figures, and the effort that it takes to main it's hard work being an actor. You got to show up. I mean, it's hard work, and so. I really think that those are real inspirations for us as far as, just keep moving.
Yeah, one of the things, one of my soapboxes is ageism. And a lot of it is self-directed. You reach 70 or 75 and you're going like, oh yeah, you think that you're looking at your last few years. Whereas as you say, jeepers, like hundreds in the crosshairs. It may be 30 years away, but it's in the crosshairs. Like I thoroughly plan on it. But the really good point that no longer are you looking at being retired for 5, 10, or 15 years. If you say you retire at 65, that classic 65, you need to plan for, say, 30 years, 40 years. And if you don't make it, I guess your kids get a bit more money. But in the meantime, don't think that it's all going to end, because sometimes that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy too.
Yeah.
You start being like physically, mentally old, even though you're going to live for another 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
I saw the term self-sabotage on your website. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people just get into this mindset of their anxiety around money turns into a whole string of poor decisions, and they just keep going with that. I just was on a call earlier today with exactly that case, where it's kind of just creating a situation where they were making a set of decisions that were just not, that just weren't going to pay off for them from an emotional perspective. And this has actually came back to a couple's kind of thing, where they needed to have this conversation, but they were just moving in exactly the opposite direction from what they needed. So I think that they're just, sadly, we see people that they've written this story about themselves that is kind of packed with negativity, and that still, they're still acting that out. When you, there's research that shows that because of our innate focus on danger, all right, we're in the savannah, we're focused, we're always looking, we're always worried about, you know, about danger, that 70% of our thoughts are focused on what can go wrong, not what's going right. Okay. And we just build that in. And so we've got this narrative about ourselves that continues to carry us in this direction where we become our own worst enemy. You know, we just get completely stuck in what we're doing. There's something called narrative therapy. It's a whole type of therapy, that's built around this idea that we have these stories, and one of the kind of tenets of narrative therapy is you are not the problem. The problem is the problem, and the whole idea of that is that we need to separate ourselves from this problem. It's not I'm an anxious person. You know, I have anxiety is a problem for me. Anxiety sits outside of me. It's not embedded in me. If it sits outside of me, I can begin to separate myself from that anxiety, from that problem.
You got a whole bunch more schooling to do, because you got to handle all of this with all these people. Given the times that we are currently living in, where we don't know what tomorrow will bring, as an American and a Canadian talking to each other, do you have any thoughts about we're just talking about, oh my goodness, the world's going to end. Any thoughts about a listener who might be in the U.S. or in Canada for that matter, suddenly finding themselves out of a job before they were ready or prepared?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I was just thinking about this. I don't want to throw out platitudes. I think the first thing is, don't panic. That's easy to say, but I know how scary that can be. But from a financial perspective, okay, take a step back, look at your whole financial picture, try and if you're unsteady in that, get some help from somebody that you trust. Again, this goes back to just how, like your dad, you don't talk about money. Allow yourselves to open up that you've got to try and step away from the shame. It's not your fault, but talking to somebody about your financial situation and getting somebody you trust and has some expertise to look at the situation and, okay, what can you afford? What can you cut out? What are your options? All of those different pieces. I mean, it is such a complicated picture, you know, emotionally and financially. It just breaks my heart, kind of what's happening in the U.S. right now among people that have had careers doing really useful and important things and are being told, you did a crappy job and you're done.
Is this another time where definitely talking about it because when you're facing that sort of stress and anxiety, it's really easy to think, oh my God, like you're just this person. Whereas once you start talking about it and voicing that, you know, somebody over here is going to say, oh my God, I'm in the same boat. Oh yeah, yeah. That happened to me, you know? And yeah. if nothing else, it sort of, I don't know what the word is, but you find a level of anxiety that is probably lower because you've got people to talk to and you're in the same boat and, you know, like, can you put your heads together and think up a solution or, that talking about it.
I completely agree. And I will, the personal story. So I am, and this is not an advertisement. I have been on Facebook for, you know, a long time, but very inactive. And I have a bunch of high school friends who are pretty active on Facebook. And so my whole approach to that has been, over the years, has been just to kind of every couple of weeks or a month, you know, look and see what people are saying and never contributing. And I decided this year, specifically this year, because of current events and the result of the November election, was that I'm going to kind of reinvest myself, even though I have a lot of complaints about Facebook, but this is a community that I can be part of, that is people that I trust and people that I've known, you know, for 60 years, some of them, and that I want to actively be building connections in communities so that I can get support and be supportive, because we need to do that. So yeah, I would say whether it's Facebook or Reddit or Instagram or whatever, or your neighbors, yeah, connecting with other people now is really important. I just think it's really important. So thank you for bringing that up. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and you use that word community. I am so big on community. You know, and it may take a while to find your people, but they're out there, because none of us are an island, really. As you say, there's lots of complaints. And I was actually going to mention, like, with social media and some of those stressors and self-sabotage, like you're trying to keep up with those people that are gorgeous and successful and, you know, flying off in jets and things like that. But, you know, if you can get rid of that and just remember that. And it's interesting, if you search for groups on Facebook, I've just joined a few this week, because it's like, okay, this is what I need to be learning about or following or supporting right now. And I'm sure no matter what your interest is, it's like I often say about podcasts, no matter what your interest is, you're going to find a podcast about it. So, where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Okay, so for me, I'm at www.financial-therapy.me, but I want to give you a bigger net here. So the Financial Therapy Association, which is financialtherapyassociation.org, they have a directory. It has over 100 financial therapists in the directory. So if you're interested in financial therapy, I'm here, happy to talk to people, but I'm not the only one. You know, there's a whole group of us out there. So yeah, and a lot of information about financial therapy as well.
Well, one thing I always say when I'm talking to financial planners, financial advisors, is it's really important that you do feel that connection. And I guess a financial therapist is the exact same thing, that, you know, you may have to interview a few people before you go, oh yeah, this is the person I can talk to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And kind of back to what I was saying about financial, the range of financial therapists, you know, we sort of cover everything from, yeah, I'm looking for a financial planner who I really feel like is going to listen to me, but I want financial planning, but I want I know that they've, you know, committed to that. There's a deeper level to this versus, man, I am so, you know, my whole money thing is just an utter mess. And I want somebody that really is a therapist, you know, and it's going to help me to figure out what's going on in my life that's got me so screwed up. So you've got that kind of continuum there. So it's important, if you're thinking about financial therapy, of like, okay, what are I really trying to accomplish? And then, you know, moving forward from there.
Yeah, good point. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Sure.
I mentioned in my intro that you changed careers. You reinvigorated an old career. Can you tell us about that process? Like, I think you left the 9-to-5 or your usual 9-to-5, your long-term 9-to-5 at what, 67?
Yeah. Yeah.
And went into this. What was that like doing that at that age?
Well, I was pretty discouraged in the job that I had. That's a part of it. I was ready. I had a really great job because I had lots of flexibility. I was sort of my own one person research organization. My boss left me alone. But I felt really isolated and underappreciated. And so the money wasn't enough to keep me going. And I initially decided that I would do consulting work around technical. I was working on cloud computing at the time, that I would do technical stuff. And that, for a bunch of reasons, wasn't going very well. And then COVID came along, and it was like, oh, I'm... other people need this way more than me, so I'm out of this. And I then decided that an interesting thing to do would be to do support for nonprofit organizations. I was already the treasurer and on the board of a nonprofit in my local community, and I found this organization. I'll give them, this is an advertisement, an organization called Catch a Fire. That's kind of a matchmaking organization between people that want to volunteer in more business arena kinds of stuff, like helping with strategic planning or budgeting or marketing or those kind of things, and nonprofit organizations that are looking for people to help them on a project basis. So it's not like, oh yeah, I'm just signing up as a volunteer for this organization. It's, I'm going to come in, I'm going to help you with this stuff, and then I'm going to move on. And so I started doing that. And really enjoyed that work. And then through that, it really tuned me into how challenging it is for people in nonprofit organizations to deal with the financial side. They're very passionate about what they're doing as a nonprofit. But then they have this financial piece. They've got to support the organization. They've got to raise money. They've got to manage a budget. And I was really struck by how much of an emotional piece that was for them, that I thought that I would be teaching them how to use a spreadsheet. And what I was teaching them was how to be comfortable with the fact that they, you know, were responsible for this money and that was okay, that they could do it. And that led me to the Financial Therapy Association. So this was, it was sort of just sort of kind of part-time pieces that I was moving through. And then I got to the Financial Therapy Association and I was just really taken with, and part of it was this fantastic community of people that I was able to become part of. And I realized that I had this unfulfilled piece of me that I had abandoned back in my 30s, my early 30s, and that this was an opportunity for me to restart that, which I had never anticipated. I kind of looked at all those pieces and I thought, yeah, I could really do this. And so, and I'm a pretty rational person in a sense. When I look at doing something, I want to understand all the parts that is this going to work? And all of this stuff fell into place. It was not an easy decision in the sense that I had to qualify for a social work license in Colorado. And that required me to, it's a 4-hour exam that you have to take for that. And a lot of people don't pass it. And so I spent easily a month studying for that exam. I took the exam. Then I had to basically connect with a clinic in Colorado to work for. So I'm in this pre-licensed state. So you talk about ageism. I'm in a supervision group. I have to have a certain number of, I have to have a couple hours of supervision every week. or every month, and I'm in a group where everybody else in the group has just gotten their master's degree. so they're mostly in their 30s, maybe 40s. I'm like their grandfather. But when you say, what was it like for me? It was really wonderful. It was really like having such a great time. You know, I'm doing something that I really care about. I'm learning new stuff all the time. So yeah, now I'm on the board of the Financial Therapy Association, and so I'm really part of this community that I'm really passionate about, and I'm really grateful to that all this has come together for me.
So many takeaways there in terms of, I think it's not an uncommon story for people our age who say, yeah, I'm done with that, whatever I did for the last 30, 40 years. Do I have it in me? How do I go to find whatever is next? And yeah, whether it's you started out as a volunteer and look where it's led you, do some digging, resurrect an old career or an old, course of study, check your ageism at the door, because I guess you have to realize that, if you've got a 35-year-old watching you, it's really easy to, if you got on your high horse, to say, oh, well, I'm not going to, listen to that. But, just so, as I say, so many takeaways. That's great. Well, I'm so glad that it all came together in a relatively smooth way, it sounds like. You had your dead ends,
I was really lucky. Things just happened for me that I totally just didn't anticipate, and they all were just moving in the right direction for me. It's been a pretty incredible experience, to tell you the truth. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, and I'll just add from my own experience too that, whether it's the universe or your own focus, I don't know. I often say that I always land on my feet. Fortunately, thank you, universe. But you gotta keep looking at the positives, and just keep dancing.
Yeah.
Okay. Your website link will be in the show notes. I'm going to put all those links that you've mentioned. I edit this, so as I go through again now, I will find all the links that you talked about and put those on your page at our website. So that's great. Listeners, if you have thoughts on today's show, please talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Maybe there was a question that I didn't ask John. Ask it in the comments and I will get you an answer. Share this episode. I mentioned in the intro that I've chatted with an American retirement planner and a Canadian retirement planner this month. Plans are important, but it may be really hard to plan when you're burdened with stories and beliefs from the past or fears about the future that really don't serve you now. Maybe you have a friend who is unusually quiet when retirement planning or money conversations happen. That's the person who will appreciate listening to John. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button on your favorite podcast platform. That helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. John Hankins, thank you for being my guest today and giving us so much food for thought. And thank you for always keeping that positive mindset. That's great. Helping us understand that our stories from the past are normal, but they don't need to define our futures, which is great.
Agnes, thank you. And thank you for supporting our generation in this journey forward.
There you go. We'll get there. 100. Okay. Have a great rest of week.
You too.